Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved, and its host and founder is the extraordinary Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she is indeed a champion in the battle against ageism. We have a good show for you. Today, Carol will be talking with Ashton Applewhite, who is quite a writer. Her latest book is titled This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism, published by Network Books. That's coming up in the second half of the program. Now we're going to talk about something that is literally out of this world. Carol Marks is going to be talking with Michael Summers, a planetary scientist and professor of physics and astronomy at George Mason University. He's written a book titled Exoplanets, Diamond Worlds, Super Earths, Pulsar Planets, and the New Search for Life Beyond Our Solar System. It's published by Smithsonian Books.
So what is a good definition for an exoplanet?
Okay, I think the simplest definition would be a planet that is not in our own solar system. Our own solar system is made up of the sun. So the nine classical planets that you learn in elementary school, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and I include Pluto. And then anything beyond that, anything that orbits another star that's a large planetary body, or even if it's floating around in interstellar space between the stars, that would be an exoplanet.
Now, how many stars have exoplanets around them, and how many have we found so far?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We have found, at this point, confirmed 3,600 planets that orbit other stars. And we're discovering them at a rate of about two per day. I mean, think about that, two whole new worlds that are being discovered every day on average. And in 10 years, we'll know of 100,000 of these planets at the rate we're going. So the question of how many there are becomes very interesting, because if we extrapolate those numbers, what that means is that when you go outside at night and you look into the sky and you see a star, on average, it's going to have about 10 planets around it, like our solar system. Probably one or two, or maybe even three of those planets will be habitable, like the Earth. And there will even be more planets than that are floating around between the stars that we call rogue planets.
Amazing.
So that question that you started off with, that you know people have wondered for thousands of years if there were planets elsewhere, now we know. We know that there are far more planets than there are people that have ever lived on this world. It's just astonishing. I've been doing this, studying exoplanets for 15 years, and I still have a hard time grasping.
And you know, it's kind of humbling, too. And you know, what
found
most interesting, and I wanted to ask you about, was a satellite, a Kepler satellite that was launched in 2009, I guess was responsible for discovering the exoplanet. So how in the world did that spacecraft do that? I guess it had a telescope on it, right?
Right. It has a very special telescope that looks at a part of the sky close to the area where there are a lot of stars. So it was able to monitor the light from about 150,000 stars continuously for several years. And what it found was that watching those stars, it would see the light from the stars dim occasionally. And then that dimming would be repeated on an even frequency. And what that meant was that it was detecting a planet that was going around in front of the star, and as it was in front of the star, it would dim the light from the star. And what it found was that of the 150,000 stars, over 1% of them had planets around them, and that could be detected. And this telescope was able then to detect most of the planets that have been discovered to date. And when I mentioned the word 3,600, that's the number of planets that have been confirmed by Kepler and other telescopes. The number of candidate planets that have been detected are approaching 6,000 additional planets. So it's a very efficient telescope for finding planets around nearby stars.
It certainly is. And before we talk about some of the newly discovered exoplanets, let's talk about what we've learned about some of the planets in our own solar system. And you mentioned Pluto, and that you don't call it a dwarf planet. I guess some people have designated it as a dwarf planet, but isn't it actually the gateway to a whole new part of our of a belt?
Right. It's a new type of planet. You know, we're familiar with planets like the Earth. Mercury, Venus, and Mars are what we call terrestrial rocky planets that have a metallic core. Then there are the giant planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Pluto is a third type of planet, a third category, and it's typically smaller. There are a few larger than Pluto. Most of them are smaller, and we've detected over 1,000 of these planets in the, what we call the Kuiper Belt. And we estimate that there are probably 100,000 of them out there. And we think that they're made up mostly of rock and water ice because it's so cold, it's far enough away from the sun that most of the ice on the surface is going to be frozen solid, very hard. But even Pluto is an interesting geologically active place. We found that it's a world that has an atmosphere, it has climate change, it has active geology. It has a heat source in the interior that is driving the geology. And something you may not know, which is a recent discovery, is that there's strong evidence that Pluto has an ocean of liquid water underneath its surface that may be larger than all the oceans on Earth. So it has all the general characteristics of a planet and then some. It's a very interesting place.
It is, and they've even discovered an unexpected haze.
The haze is incredible. That's my area of expertise, the atmospheric sciences. The haze is a light blue sort of fuzziness that extends far above the surface, at least 200 kilometers above the surface. And it's very hard to explain because we see very thin layers in that haze, at least 20 of them, that are only about a kilometer or two thick. And they're very stable and very well organized. It's really hard to explain.
But they must be beautiful, too.
Oh, it is beautiful. You can go to the New Horizons website and see all the pictures of Pluto that we have, and they're really spectacular.
And are they thinking about taking away that dwarf status, I hope, and giving it back right, for planets?
Well, the International Astronomical Union was the body that, demoted Pluto from planethood status. There are many of us that would like for the IAU to revisit that issue. And it's not just because of sympathy or history. It's because we're now learning that there are so many different categories of planets. Pluto is just the third category. We've discovered at least a dozen other categories of planets around other stars, planets that are made all of water, planets that are made all of metal, planets that may be made of diamond, planets that are all rock. We find planets orbiting two stars, some orbiting three stars, some orbiting four stars. We find planets that are just floating around between the stars. So there are many different categories, and Pluto is just one of those categories.
Didn't we think that everything, the other planets were going to be like ours?
Well, I don't think we knew enough to really have an educated opinion about it until we started discovering them. We kind of assumed that planets elsewhere would be like the planets in our solar system. But I think everyone, at least everyone that I know that has been involved in this, have been just astonished, that have just been flabbergasted at the diversity of planets that we find elsewhere and all the myriad of types of planets. And there's much more to come. We're just scratching the surface on this ocean of planets.
Now, I was also, you know, fascinated to learn that even the moons around the planets in our solar system, some of them are so remarkable. So can you tell our listeners about Europa, one of Jupiter's moons? I guess it's the water that makes it so unique.
Right. Well, Jupiter has quite a few moons. Most of them are very small. There are four large ones that we call the Galilean moons, because Galileo discovered them with a small telescope, and you can even see them with a very cheap telescope. Those four moons are very large, Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto. And Europa, we now know, has a subsurface ocean of liquid water. In fact, it's salty water. And that ocean underneath an icy crust, a frozen icy crust of water, is on top of this thick ocean, at least 100 kilometers thick. That ocean is larger in volume than all the water on Earth. Also, Ganymede and Callisto, we now know, just in the last few years, we've discovered that they too have oceans of liquid water. And we found evidence that two of the moons of Saturn have subsurface oceans of liquid water. And I mentioned Pluto having a subsurface ocean of liquid water. It may turn out that oceans underneath an ice crust may be one of the most common types of places in our galaxy to find life.
And I guess that they're going to be launching in 2020 a spacecraft to fly around Europa, so maybe we'll learn more.
Right, yeah. The Europa Orbiter is going to be a very interesting mission, because hopefully we'll be able to detect emissions of gases from that subsurface ocean around Europa. That is, the water is under high pressure, so somewhere there should be geysers of gas and water that are spurting out of the interior. And by studying that, we may be able to figure out what that ocean is made of, what the composition is. We may be able to search for organic compounds.
And thus, signatures of life. That's Michael Summers, a planetary scientist and professor of physics and astronomy at George Mason University, in conversation with Carol Marx. His book is titled Exoplanets, Diamond Worlds, Super Earths, Pulsar Planets, and the New Search for Life Beyond Our Solar System, published by Smithsonian Books. The conversation between Carol Marx and Michael Summers continues when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, resumes in a moment.
Going back to the My Vegan thing, you cost me a lot of misery, and all total, $2,700 in doggy fees, and all it took was one container of Dynavite, 2 pounds, 3 ounces, and my dog has been cured. Abby's a 5-year-old silky terrier. She had, like, chicken pox on her belly, clusters of bumps on her back, and she was allergic to, like, 70-some-odd things. So the dermatologist, it was, oh, yeah, just keep giving her needles every 10 days, but she's not clearing up. And then it came up on my radio, Dynavite.
Dinovite.
.com 859-428-1000.
Dynavite is nutrition.
I give her the Dynavite after 5 weeks, and one morning there was nothing there, and I'm like, she's all clear. There wasn't one blemish on her body. Her fur is beautiful. She is totally happy. She is as healthy, bump-free, pimple-free, shiny, silky. It turned our lives around. So thank you very much for Dynavite. I couldn't be happier. Dynavite's the bomb.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dinovite.com.
Bernadette Duncan spent 26 years as a radio talk show producer. In her new book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, she shares her adventures in the trenches of big-time talk radio during the changing backdrop of America's pre- and post-9/11 realities. This exciting story includes Bernadette's impressions of the quirky celebrity talk show hosts whom she served during her career, Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and more. It's full of anecdotes about hundreds of high-profile guests from media, show business, and politics. Also quirky, ego-driven, and neurotic. Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers. An analytical look at the media, journalism, and the complex nature of ego. Get it now at Amazon.com. Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Let's get back to the conversation between the host of our show, Carol Marx, and Michael Summers, a planetary scientist who's written the book Exoplanets, Diamond Worlds, Super Earths, Pulsar Planets, and the New Search for Life Beyond Our Solar System, published by Smithsonian Books.
And one of the surprising things I learned from reading your book was the kind of stars that the exoplanets rotate around, and they're different, aren't they, than our sun?
Well, yeah, that's true. Most stars are different than our sun. We have sort of an average size star. There are some that are bigger and quite a few that are smaller. The most common type of star, though, is what we call an M dwarf. It's smaller than our sun, and it's a little bit cooler. It's still extremely hot, and there's nuclear fusion going on that causes it to shine. But they are smaller than our sun. And about 40% of all the stars in our galaxy are thought to be of this type. And we found lots of planets around them. In fact, the announcement by NASA 3 weeks ago of what they call the TRAPPIST-1 star has 7 Earth-like planets around it, 3 of which are in the distance range from the central star, where you could have liquid water, oceans of water on the surface. It wouldn't be ice-covered. It would be liquid. But 7 Earth-like planets around one star was just, again, another astonishing discovery.
It sure was. And, you know, we talked at the beginning of the show about how diverse the planets are. And, of course, I was fascinated by the 55 Cancri diamond planet. What's that all about? Why? I mean, really, I'd love to see it.
Yeah, all of us would. When we study exoplanets, we measure their size, in other words, their diameter, and we can also get a measure of their mass. So from those two things, we can estimate the density, how many grams per cubic centimeter on average is inside of the planet. And when we do that for 55 Cancri E, what we find is that the density is consistent with almost pure elemental carbon. But that is still a tentative set of measurements, a tentative measurements of the radius and the mass. As we refine those estimates, we'll get a better picture of what's inside of it. But right now, it looks like the interior is consistent with a large amount of elemental carbon, and this planet is about 5 times as massive as the Earth, maybe even a little bit bigger than that. And what that means is that carbon is going to be under high pressure throughout the interior of the planet, and carbon at high pressure, as we know, is diamond, crystalline diamond. So this planet could conceivably have 10,000 kilometers thickness of a mantle of crystalline diamond inside of it. But it gets even stranger because the planet is so big and so massive. If there's diamond at the core, that diamond could be under such intense pressure that the diamond would flow like a liquid. So it's truly bizarre. Whatever it turns out to be, it's going to be an interesting place.
And the more exoplanets that we discover, I'm sure we'll find others that are equally diverse and unexpectedly exciting.
Exactly. That's unexpectedly exciting. It's a good way
of
putting it.
So I want to ask you finally, isn't this an exciting time to be a planetary scientist, a professor, because scientists are coming up with so many new techniques to detect the chemicals in the atmosphere?
This is the golden age of planetary sciences. When I was a kid, there were 9 planets, and most of my career I spent studying those 9. And now, just the planets we know of, there are more planets than there are planetary scientists. And that number is growing, like I told you, so rapidly that we can't even keep up with the individual discoveries. We have to now organize the planets into categories to study them. So it's a unique time in human history that we're able to answer that question about are there planets elsewhere, but we might be able to answer the question, is there life elsewhere? And that's, I think, a pretty intriguing question as
well. And you know what my question is, since we seem to be messing up our planet so completely, we might be able to find or have to find, to find a planet that human life could make, be a colony on.
It's pretty clear we're causing some substantial damage to the Earth. But every planet that we discover is unique. No planet is going to be exactly like the Earth. Every planet has its own story, its own birth and evolution, its life, and maybe even how planets die, which they occasionally do. They can be vaporized in a supernova explosion. And I like to think about planets that... In a way, you think about humans. Every human is unique. I mean, of the 7+ billion humans that are on Earth, every single one is unique. It has its own story. And the same way, every planet that we find in our solar system or beyond, it is just unique. It has, again, like I said, its own set of circumstances in which it was born and in which it's developed. So I don't expect we'll ever find a planet that's exactly like the Earth, but we found many planets already, several hundred, that are about the same size as the Earth, same density as the Earth, where you can have liquid water. And we're searching those planets carefully now for signatures of chemistry in their atmospheres that might indicate not just normal chemistry, but biology. And that search for what we call biomarkers is a big driving force in exoplanet research right now.
Oh, I bet. Now, how can our listeners get your book? Because I found it very easy to read.
It's on Amazon, just called Exoplanets, and it's a rather short book. When we were writing it, we had this tendency to add more and more technicality to it, but the end result is that we realized that this book is going to be out of date in 5 years at the rate the discoveries are going. So we decided it would be much more beneficial, much more useful, just to give the public a snapshot of the incredible diversity and the incredible types of planets that we're discovering. So we wrote it at a level that we hope just about anyone can read and understand.
That's Michael Summers, a planetary scientist and professor of physics and astronomy at George Mason University and the author of Exoplanets, Diamond Worlds, Super Earths, Pulsar Planets, and the New Search for Life Beyond Our Solar System. It's published by Smithsonian Books. The interview is conducted by the host of our program, Carol Marks. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Carol Marks returns shortly with a conversation. She's going to be talking to the author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism, published by Network Books. She'll be speaking with Ashton Applewhite when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues. Hi, this is Michael Harrison. I hope you're enjoying this installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, and finding it to be a meaningful listening experience. This wonderful little weekend program has been on the radio across America in one form or another for more than 20 years. Its mission is to provide mature Americans with information and content about aging to help them cope with the nonstop challenges of life during these hectic modern times. We're talking about health, finances, relationships, and plain old fun. Whether it's learning about the latest technology and social norms, or fondly remembering yesterday's arts and entertainment, A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, is dedicated to serving that gigantic segment of the population so sadly ignored by most of today's popular media. Founded and hosted by a truly great lady, Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the ongoing battle against ageism, this program is geared to what has commonly been referred to as the sandwich generation. Baby boomers who are coping with such challenges as still supporting their adult children while caring for their elderly parents. It's my honor and privilege to be associated with Carol Marks and be a part of her mission to support, defend, and inspire today's generation of what she lovingly calls seasoned citizens. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, online at www.atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. And right here on this great radio station every weekend. Thank you so much for listening.
This is Brad Shepard. Whenever you think of Social Security, do you think of survivor's benefits too? You see, Social Security is more than retirement. Social Security makes regular monthly payments to the families of workers who die too. More than 7 million people get survivor's benefits from Social Security, including almost 2 million children. Benefits that pay for food and clothing, medical care, and school benefits you can count on when you're planning your financial future. For more information, go to the SSA website at www.ssa.gov.
Michael Harrison here. Those of you who follow talk radio and are interested in what goes on behind the scenes might also know me as the publisher of Talkers Magazine, the trade publication that serves the talk media industry. We cover the talk show business as it exists on radio, television, and the Internet. I often have the opportunity to speak about these media as a guest on radio and TV talk shows or comment on industry developments in newspapers and magazines. For the past 2 years, I've also hosted a weekly podcast that delves into the media in general and focuses on the rapid changes, not only in radio, but all of communications technology. Changes that I believe are contributing to rewiring the human nervous system. Computers, social media, and all the different platforms of instantaneous communications that define the new digital age are combining to actually accelerate our evolution as a species. Sound pretty far out? Well, it is. As a matter of fact, the name of this podcast series is Up Close and Far Out with Michael Harrison. Each week, I interview an outstanding personality from the world of radio or any number of its related fields in the arts, sciences, entertainment, politics, or academia. It's available to download, and you can subscribe to it at absolutely no charge whatsoever at iTunes or at the website www.upcloseandfarout.com. Up Close and Far Out with Michael Harrison. Just a click away on your computer or mobile device. Visit iTunes or www.upcloseandfarout.com. Make Up Close and Far Out with Michael Harrison a weekly podcast listening experience. Thank you. This week on Up Close and Far Out with Michael Harrison, an exclusive conversation with talk show host Stephanie Miller.
Going back to the My Vegas thing, you cost me a lot of misery, and all total, $2,700 in doggy fees, and all it took was one container of Dynavite, 2 pounds, 3 ounces, and my dog has been cured. Abby's a 5-year-old silky terrier. She had, like, chicken pox on her belly, clusters of bumps on her back, and she was allergic to, like, 70-some-odd things. So the dermatologist, it was, oh, yeah, just keep giving her needles every 10 days, but she's not clearing up. And then it came up on my radio, Dynavite.
Dinovite.
.com 859-428-1000.
Dynavite is nutrition.
I give her the Dynavite after 5 weeks, and one morning there was nothing there, and I'm like, she's all clear. There wasn't one blemish on her body. Her fur is beautiful. She is totally happy. She is as healthy, bump-free, pimple-free, shiny, silky. It turned our lives around. So thank you very much for Dynavite. I couldn't be happier. Dynavite's the bomb.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dinovite.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, here's Carol Marks, the host of our program, in conversation with Ashton Applewhite. Ashton Applewhite is a prolific writer. Her blog is titled ThisChairRocks.com. She's written for Harper's, Playboy, and many other publications, and she's been on staff at the American Museum of Natural History since 2000, where she writes about literally everything under the sun. Her book is titled This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism, published by Networked Books.
If you had told me 10 years ago that I would be obsessed with the topic of aging, I would have said, are you crazy? What's there to, you know, how depressing would have been my first thought. In hindsight, because, of course, hindsight is 2020, it started, as you say, as a project about people over 80 who work, inspired by my in-laws who were in their 80s and booksellers. And I realized in hindsight that was sort of my safe passage because work is positive. Who isn't interested in old people who are busy doing something that's acceptable, blah, blah. And what happened was two important things. I met a ton of really interesting, engaged people in their 80s and 90s, which did not surprise me. But what surprised the heck out of me was all the things. I also started researching about longevity because that's what I do. I'm a journalist and a scholar of sorts. And everything I learned, I thought I knew about what it would be like to be that old was different. I mean, for example, I thought the odds of ending up in a nursing home were probably pretty good. And it turns out that the percentage of Americans over 65, that's a big group, in nursing homes is 4%, and it's dropping. It's down to 5%.
So I have
and
to ask
I
you,
thought,
yeah.
Yeah.
I have to ask you, Ashton, then saying that, so many Americans over 65 live independently. Why, then, do so many of them worry about depression and dementia, that that's what is going to face them? So where do these feelings come from?
Yeah, I mean, that's another. Older people have better, enjoy better mental health than the young or middle-aged. And study after study shows that people are happiest at the beginnings and the ends of their lives. So your question is absolutely on point. Why do we have these negative perceptions? And the reason is because we live in a culture that drowns out all but the negative about late life. Because if aging is perceived, and we, when you grow up looking at children's books that have depicted older women as either witches or placid happy grannies, when you are besieged by ads for wrinkle creams, when anti-aging messages are everywhere our whole life long, and there's no counter-narrative, which is why I wrote the book, to provide a counter-narrative, those ideas about aging become incorporated into our sense of self, that internalized ageism, when we actually buy into the notion that our older selves are worth less than our younger selves. And the reason it happens in broad strokes is because if aging, which is a natural, beautiful, powerful process, is presented as a disease or an illness, then they can sell us stuff to cure it. And if aging is a problem or ugly, then they can sell us stuff to try and fix it or make it better. And, of course, aging is none of those things.
Now, the research that you found that really, grabbed me was the part that people are happiest at the beginning and the end of their lives. So why is that? Why is that? And why don't we hear more about
that? That's a good question, too. I love it when people question that statistic at my talks because it's so well substantiated. It holds up around the world. It holds up independent of marital status. It holds up independent of class. I thought, when I first learned that, I thought, oh, they must have cornered two 80-year-olds and given them a cookie and said, how are you feeling? And it's incredibly well substantiated. And the reason is, I mean, I didn't believe it actually either, skeptic that I am, until I learned about the underlying research, which has to do with the fact that as we get older, as we hit around 80, it's different for everybody. And, of course, it's not true of everyone, but it is absolutely true of the overwhelming majority of older people because of changes that occur in the healthy older brain, that we become better at choosing what we want to do and how we want to spend our time and prioritizing. The awareness that time is short does not fill people with dread. That was another assumption that I, came to this with, another prejudice. Instead, it makes people spend their time more wisely, and it makes us, children live in the moment because they don't know how to do anything else. And olders do it because we know that time is growing short. And it is that ability to live in the moment and to appreciate what's right here in front of us that is responsible for that sense of well-being, and that is the neurological underpinnings of that finding that people are happiest at the beginnings and the ends of their lives, which is called the U-curve of happiness. So if you don't believe me, and I wouldn't believe it if I just heard someone say it on the radio, Google U-curve of happiness, and you'll see how much data there is that supports this. And it's because of changes that aging itself bestows upon us.
And don't you think that in our social and economic culture today that we really frame aging as a problem, and then business can make money from from stopping occurring whatever we have?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the same thing. I think a really useful analogy is to the whole body image acceptance movement, that as long as we buy into the notion that we should not only be young, but we should have, you know, perfect bodies without a wrinkle and without a speck of cellulite, then we spend millions and millions of dollars, billions, in fact, on, on, you name it, on diets, on cosmetic surgery, on Botox, on cosmetics that don't do anything for you. You know, satisfaction is not monetizable. And we live in a hyper-capitalist society. And as long, and it's honestly, there's an analogy also in the medicalization of natural processes, like menopause. Like a better example is erectile dysfunction, which I talked to a doctor who said it should really be called erectile dissatisfaction, because your genitals don't behave at 70 the way they did at 17, but it doesn't mean that that's something wrong with you. It doesn't mean that you can't continue to have really wonderful sex for as long as it is important to you. But when we are brainwashed to believe that the goal is to look the same and behave the same as we did when we were 17, of course we're dissatisfied and we're going to buy the narrative that something's wrong with us. And, you know, aspiring to youth is just a dumb goal, because no one stays young. And it's pretty wacky in this society that we think, you know, we should all learn from life and grow from life and change and adapt and celebrate that. And then somewhere north of middle age, the goal switches, because of those commercial forces in large part, to keeping everything the same.
And that's not possible.
It's not possible. Exactly. It's not possible.
That's Ashton Applewhite, author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism, in conversation with Carol Marks. The conversation continues when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, resumes.
July 25th, 2006, we adopted April. She's a purebred, orange and white, Brittany. But when she started scratching like crazy, I said to John, it's got to be her food. You know, what you put into a dog is what you get out. We heard this radio commercial, and this woman was so excited about Dinovite.
D-I-N-O-V-I-T-E.
.com.
859-428-1000.
I said to John, I'm getting this. So the Dinovite comes, and I thought, a light bulb moment. She loves her dog food. She always lays a little bit in her bowl. So we added a huge scoop of Dinovite in it, and then we swished it around like gravy. She dove into that bowl. She licked it clean. She loved it. So that's been the routine for almost 10 years. April gets Dinovite for dessert. Her coat is now soft, it's silky, it's smooth. She even walks like a little princess.
859-428-1000.
On Dinovite. She's Little Miss Hollywood.
DINOVITE.com.
This is Brad Shepard. Whenever you think of Social Security, do you think of survivors' benefits too? You see, Social Security is more than retirement. Social Security makes regular monthly payments to the families of workers who die too. More than 7 million people get survivors' benefits from Social Security, including almost 2 million children. Benefits that pay for food and clothing, medical care, and school benefits you can count on when you're planning your financial future. For more information, go to the SSA website at www.ssa.gov.
An important message for Americans eligible for Medicare. Are you receiving all the benefits available to you? Do you know there's money available to lower your Medicare prescription cost? Well, now is the time to find coverage that's right for you at the right price. You can spend hours looking for it yourself, or you can call Health Markets and let us do the legwork for you. We'll search a variety of plans from nationally recognized companies to find coverage that's the best fit for you at a price that fits your budget. And we'll do it at no charge to you. Plus, you may be able to save money on prescriptions. Call now. See if you qualify. And put our free service to work for you.
800-990-0334. 800-990-0334. 800-990-0334. That's 800-990-0334.
Health Markets Insurance Agency is the DBA of InSphere Insurance Solutions, Inc. Licensed in all 50 states.
Continuing
and
now
service
with
and product availability varies by state. Agents
Michael
may be compensated based on your
chair. Let's get back to the conversation between the host of our program, Carol Marks, and Ashton Applewhite, author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism.
Now, you said something about some of the problems that older people have with ageism is that they've internalized it. What did you mean about that when you said that? Because I couldn't quite understand it.
Right. Well, when we grow up in a society that barrages us with messages that old is ugly, old is useless. I mean, if you hear people say, you know, terrible things about old people, including about ourselves. People say really denigrating things about how they can't remember anything, how they don't look good, whatever. And those, that, when we just accept that narrative, if you think about African Americans before the Civil Rights Movement and during it, remember the slogan, Black is beautiful?
Right.
Any marginalized population is barraged with messages that they are not desirable. And Black is Beautiful was an incredibly powerful slogan because Black people looked at themselves and said, I mean, I don't mean to generalize, I'm not Black, but, you know, looked at themselves and said, why are we buying into this narrative? Look at us. Look at us. We are beautiful. We are fantastic. And that was incredibly empowering. The message, you know, when you internalize the message that you are ugly or that you are incompetent, I mean, take forgetting things. Every time you make a senior moment joke, you are reinforcing the notion, which is absolutely not true, that old people can't remember anything. Dementia is not typical of aging. The real epidemic is anxiety over memory loss. But in a society that wants to sell us memory games and wants to sell us therapies and wants us to feel insecure so that we buy stuff, you know, then we, and when there's no narrative saying, that's ridiculous and, you know, you don't need that. What's happening to you is natural and is very, very unlikely to be a sign of actual dementia. You know, so we need to push back. When we don't push back, it's because we've internalized these messages. Or take the women's movement. You know, women for a long time were, you know, thought that they couldn't do everything that a man could do. And it wasn't till the women's movement came along and said, whoa, you know what? We can run companies. We can drive cars. We can vote. We can do these things. The idea that women couldn't do them was socially constructed. The idea that older people are incompetent or useless or ugly is socially constructed. And that means we can change it. And the very first and crucial place to start is between our own ears. Because that's what internalized means, right? It's inside our head.
Absolutely.
And so the very first step is to look at your own attitudes towards your own age and aging and see where they, you know, and think about it, because they're probably pretty negative, and compare it to the reality. I mean, I just turned 64. You know, I've passed all these big birthdays that you're conditioned to dread, and there are things about aging that I don't like, you know, the physical decline is absolutely real. But there's an awful lot about being 64 that I really, really love, and it's like, how come we never hear about that? Let's tap into our actual experience
this is a hard question to ask you, but now, Ashton, if you could banish just one stereotype about aging, what would it be, and what's the hardest ageism to get rid of, do you think?
That's a hard one. I would say generally it's the idea of incompetence and powerlessness, but I think for, you know, that older people deserve less of a vote or less of a say in things because we're going to be ushered off the stage. There was a tremendous amount of that in the press recently about the Brexit vote in Europe, about because older people voted to leave, about how old people should be denied the right to vote. Not okay. I think for women, one of the toughest things is to recalibrate our notion of beauty and think about, like, the simple question about who gets to say that wrinkles are ugly. You know, they are the map of our experience, of our lives. And when we turn our faces into frozen masks, we change who we are, and we collude in this idea that we are only powerful and beautiful in so much as we resemble our younger selves. And that is deeply self-destructive. It's analogous to people of color passing for white or gay people passing for straight. And, of course, I understand why people do those things. They are really effective strategies. But, you know, and it's necessary. I mean, you know, think of all the women who dye their hair to cover the gray and don't like doing it. And they do it so they can hang on to their jobs and so they can be, you know, more dateable in their own eyes. But the thing that really makes you dateable, you know, attractive, is confidence. So we need to work hard at looking at who we are through our age and as our full, incredible power, you know, powerful self, which we are because age, there are losses. But age is also, and probably even more, an additive process because we become the sum of all our experiences. And we get enriched by that. So to draw on what we, you know this. People know that in their hearts. We know that the experience of getting older is different from the way it's portrayed. So tap into that.
That's Ashton Applewhite, author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism, in conversation with Carol Marks. The conversation continues when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, resumes.
So when we brought him home, we didn't realize that Bear, the rescue dog, was actually sick. He had very flaky skin. He was dropping a lot of fur, and the vet wanted to do steroid injections, special dog food. Nothing seemed to work. So I've been hearing Dinovite on the radio for years.
DINOVITE.com
859-428-1000.
It never actually crossed my mind to try it until I was just at a dead end. And then it finally sunk in. Oh, you're talking about hair and skin. And all right, I'll try it. Well, it took probably 6 weeks, but after we started using Dinovite, no more flaky skin. He doesn't scratch and itch, and he started to put weight on. It was awesome. He makes us feel like we saved him. Every rescue dog in America deserves Dinovite for 90 days. I wish that we would have started the Dinovite right away. It would have been so much easier.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Bernadette Duncan spent 26 years as a radio talk show producer. In her new book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, she shares her adventures in the trenches of big-time talk radio during the changing backdrop of America's pre- and post-9/11 realities. This exciting story includes Bernadette's impressions of the quirky celebrity talk show hosts whom she served during her career, Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and more. It's full of anecdotes about hundreds of high-profile guests from media, show business, and politics. Also quirky, ego-driven, and neurotic. Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers. An analytical look at the media, journalism, and the complex nature of ego. Get it now at Amazon.com.
Do you use the expensive blue or yellow pills to charge your sex life? Are you thinking about it? What if we can promise you the same results for less than $3 a pill? If you're paying $20 a pill for the other pills, you're getting taken to the cleaners. Our pills deliver the exact same results for less than $3. You'll save more than $16 a pill for the same results. And right now, radio callers will get 44 blue or yellow pills for $120 with free discreet shipping. You can save more than $700 off pharmacy prices. Charge your sex life now and save a ton of money. Call now and get your 44 pills and save over $700 and qualify for free shipping. Stop overpaying and call right now.
800-296-1548, 800-296-1548, 800-296-1548. That's 800-296-1548.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Time now for the final segment of our hour and the concluding segment of the interview between the host of our program, Carol Marks, and Ashton Applewhite, author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism.
And I wanted to ask you, because I know that you're working very hard on your mission to create a mass movement of all ages, nationalities, and races that can effectively battle ageism, if you could give this new radical age movement that you're working for, against ageism, what would you call it? Because I noticed in your book you said you didn't like a lot of terms like successful aging. So why don't you like successful aging, and what term do you like?
I don't like successful aging because all aging is successful. Otherwise, you're dead. And a lot of these mainstream sites promote an idea that if you eat enough kale or do enough sit-ups or whatever, you are aging well. And if you are not, you are not aging well. There's two aspects to this that are problematic. One is that not everyone has access to sushi and kale and the time to do these things. You know, it takes time and money. For the regimen, you know, the anti-aging regimen. So there's a huge class bias there that hardly ever goes even mentioned. And, you know, so, and also it leaves out the huge role that luck plays. You know, we can control some factors, but there are an awful lot of things about how we age that are not subject to our control. And I really dislike this whole narrative that it's your fault if you don't age well. Think again about the women's movement. What happened there? You know, women felt like second-class citizens. They felt depressed. They felt marginalized. And they saw this as personal problems, you know, until the women's movement got started. They met in consciousness-raising groups. And I have to say, on my website, which is thischairwalks.com, if you click on resources, there's a guide to starting a consciousness-raising group downloadable for free called Who Me? Ageist. Because when you meet and you discuss problems and we think, oh, I'm having a hard time because I can't run up the stairs or my face is saggy or I'm having a hard time getting a job. Those are not personal problems. Those are widely shared political problems and they require groups of people. They require political solutions, right? And so we need to think at what's the source of the problem is not us, it's not our wrinkles, it's not our attitude, it is discrimination. And we need a social movement to draw attention to them and change that.
Well, you know, Ashton, what I like about your book and your blog, which you just mentioned, is that you really spell out how we can create a world of age equality by making discrimination on the basis of age as unacceptable as any other kind. Racism is
sexist. Yeah, why should it be? I mean, we don't let people get away with racist and sexist crap anymore. Why should it be okay when people say yucky things about older people?
That's Ashton Applewhite in conversation with the host of our program, Carol Marks. Her book is titled This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism. It's published by Networked Books. If you want more information, go to her blog, thischairrocks.com. And that about does it for this program today. I certainly hope you enjoyed it. Thank you to Carol Marks, our host and founder. Thank you to Dwayne Doobie Jr., the producer on the front line, putting it all together. Thank you to our affiliates across the country. I'm Michael Harrison on behalf of the entire Touch of Gray broadcast team, inviting you to join us right here next week, same time, for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.